Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker dealer depository service, always buying and selling all forms of precious metals, rare coins, and we do deal in jewelry and diamonds, and we do buy scrap gold, which is old, used, pretty much unwanted gold items that are not in coin or bar form or per, et cetera. We have been in business for a while. We've been here about 20 years, and so we've, I think, established ourselves fairly well. And we've got a good reputation. We don't have any, as I used to call them in the when I was in the car biz, we don't have any snakes in the grass. That was some car salesman tended to have specialize in snakes in the grass. I'm sure you can understand what I mean there. But we basically do everything upfront, honest. One of my major personality traits is I run to my problems. So I never have unresolved conflict, unresolved issues. It's the way I run my business. It's the way I run my life. I learned that many, many years ago. And if you make running to your problems a primary part of your life, you will find your life to be a lot more productive and a lot more beneficial. But anyway, Coins Plus is, we keep everything above board. We basically, we're here, our primary function is wealth and capital preservation, buying and selling coin collections, and we have a pretty high level of expertise in the building portfolios. We have the highest rated depository service in the Northwest United States and beyond, as I always say, very, very high security facility, extremely high security safes and vaults, and then the security parameters branch out past there. When I built the building, I actually, it's very, I guess you might even say as much as Hollywood-y. I mean, I really thought outside the box, and I really tried to just go above and beyond in every way as far as people's security and, you know, personal comfort goes, making sure that things are at an extraordinary level of safety and security, especially our boxes. So when you're, if your stuff's here, it's extraordinarily safe. There is a tremendous amount of people who put their trust in us that way. And as well as confidentiality and security. The building's built in such a way that when you're in here, there's balconies, there's things around you. The building is built, it's intentionally designed for security and literally so that it can't be robbed. That might sound crazy, but there's multiple corridors with bullet and bomb-resistant polycarbonate. There's different levels that can only be accessed through certain doorways and stairs. And it sounds crazy, but if you see the building, if you come in the building, if you haven't been here, it's probably one of the nicest commercial buildings you'll ever be inside. It is built to the nines. It's very beautiful. It's very kind of Euro banky. And so we take a lot of pride in who we are. We take a lot of pride in the fact that we're here. We're very, you know, proud and humble at the same time to God's blessing, but we're committed and we're not just an internet presence. And you gotta know that when you're, dealing in what we deal in, you have to be careful because folks, I've dealt with people that have done really foolish things with their money. There is some kind of scam that pops up on the internet every once in a while where a company will put out fake websites that look like really good companies, answering phones and everything. And at the same time, they will mimic the website of a big known player. And so you literally get the top Google hit for it. And so when you go to their page, you think you're on a competitor's page, and you literally click, you get the information, you wire the money, whatever, you send a check. it's going to the wrong address. The investment never shows up. I've had a couple in here a while ago, like a month ago, with a piece of paper. They'd found a company online. I don't even remember the name of it. It wasn't even legit. And, of course, that company quoted them a little bit less, you know, for gold. I mean, gold's worth what it's worth, and they were quoting them a price that was below dealer cost. But, you know, the difference is only a few percent, right? But these people just had to go for it. It just, you know, and they called, I suppose, and got fed a line or whatever. So they send in their money. Like a month later, she's like, have you ever heard of this company? And I don't remember what it was. It was like something. They put in words like government and mint. If you ever see a site that uses anything that alludes to the fact that it's part of the government, federal anything, part of the mint, and it's not .gov, in other words, it isn't the U.S. mint, run. That's one rule. Then there's a bunch of others. There's a place down in Texas who has like 15 or 20 different business names out of Beaumont, Texas, and areas around there. He's had class action lawsuit after class action lawsuit. And so basically, it's important that you need to pick the right place and the right stuff. I mean, you got to trust who you're dealing with. You got to know who you're dealing with. And because that person, you know, has to help you pick the right stuff. And that's the other thing, is a lot of times people think it's so simple. They think, oh, I'm just going to buy gold and silver. Well, you can do that. That's fine. But it doesn't give you that sophisticated sensitivity to the market. It doesn't give you that guaranteed income and growth down the road. Now, I understand there's people that are, you know, saving because, for one, our total national financial position is in really bad condition. I think I'll touch on that here in a sec. In fact, I might as well now. People will buy for that because of basically fire insurance, and then from there on they buy for security and so on. Basically, buying just for fire insurance, I've said in the past, is not a wise investment strategy, okay? And like I said, I'll touch on how messed up I think things are, and I do think I cannot imagine. When I go through the numbers with you here in a sec, I mean, there's just no way out. Our country has walked itself into a horrendous position. There's no way out. And if people say, oh, it's negative, it's this, I don't care. I want numbers. I want math. I want, you know, give me economics. Give me figures. Show me. Prove me wrong. I would love it. I welcome anybody to prove me wrong. And I'm talking with facts and evidence, not with hype and, you know, emotional response. I've had people say, you're just ridiculous. That could never happen. The government would never let that happen. Well, give me reasons why. Oh, it's just all hype. It's not going to happen. So what? Everything goes on forever just as it was, as Peter said? You know, people tend, apparently, to say that because the Bible tells us that exact thing. That people say, hey, things are going to continue on as they always have been, and they don't. That's the whole point of the scripture, that it doesn't happen that way. And so we need to be prepared. We need to be agile. We need to adapt. We need to be wise. And what's interesting is when you do deep research on the founding fathers and you get into Abraham, what's really cool is when you start to research Abraham in history through Jewish eyes, you want a different perspective on biblical history. Study ancient Judaism and their knowledge or information or stories on the past. Abraham, they say, was brilliant. They say that Abraham, get this, was trained by Noah. Noah came through the flood with an incredible breadth of knowledge that apparently Nimrod had taken. If this is really loose off the top of my head, And there's some date discrepancies in some calendars, and I can't remember that either, but they don't make sense. But it makes more sense when you go to the actual age based on the Bible. And so it's like, if I remember right, Abraham was being chased by Nimrod, and Abraham hid with Noah. Noah hid him and taught him all the ways of God. He taught him everything. And one thing that's really amazing is Noah, going back as a descendant of Seth, the descendants of Seth, I believe, the history books say that it's most likely they built the Great Pyramids. And the history books say that the descendants of Seth, basically Adam's race, were incredibly knowledgeable with astronomy. They had phenomenal knowledge of the stars and then incredible knowledge of physics and all this stuff. And that's how they built this amazing pyramid. Now, there's a possibility that the firmament that was above us before the flood amplified the stars to such an extent that everybody had an incredible knowledge of the stars. There's a possibility that they had some angelic influence because the Bible talks about the watchers in the Book of Enoch and all these other books, which, by the way, if you realize, the Book of Enoch was the number one possessed book at the time of Christ. Later on, the Roman Catholic Church abolished it and then made it punishable by death to possess, and it disappeared. And then later on, in the 1500s or whatever, copies started to surface out of Ethiopia. But when you go through the canons, there's quite a few books that were canonized out. There's a lot of information there that was canonized out that just, it gives you a completely different perspective on things. And you start to look at the books that were reserved. Now, the other thing, when you go to the Book of Enoch and the Book of Adam and Eve and all this, my greatest frustration of all is that these things are not translated by even good biblical scholars. They're not translated by specialists in Judaism or Christianity, and they mess it up. They just mess up so much of it. I've actually gone, that's why I went, one of the reasons I went to Qumran in Israel, where the Dead Sea Scrolls are, and did some, you know, you can look at the old ancient writings themselves and then look at the ancient Hebrew and see what's really being said. And if there's one thing, folks, I mean, everybody's got their Bible reading preference. I personally, I have an iPad. I use the, I also like when I, you know, I also have a laptop, but when I'm reading the Bible, I use my iPad. And I personally use Blue Letter Bible. I really like it because I can click on any word and I can look at the Hebrew, I can look at the Greek, I can look at the definitions, I can look at how often that word was used in the Bible for different meanings, etc., and it gives you the Strong's number, and you can cross-reference and all that stuff right there on your iPad. So you can read the Hebrew and really get down to the nitty-gritty. And so the story is that Adam, or Noah, he goes through the flood, of course, and he carries with him this knowledge and wisdom. And, you know, the guy was no fool. He'd built an ark that was beyond your dreams in size, you know, that lasted through the most unbelievable storm ever to hit the face of the earth. Storm isn't even a proper term. You have to understand that the outer ice shell, the firmament, crashed down to the earth. The tectonic plates started to move and water gushed up from under the earth. So much water that the plates, I think, were probably moving, and they could have been splashing up and down, while water literally covered the highest points on earth, it said, you know. And then there's all these other myths and legends that debate it. But I'm sure you've probably all heard of the study years back that showed that there was one type of DNA for man and three types for women, I think, that actually showed that our DNA came back. It fit the scenario, or chromosomes maybe it was, I don't know. It fit the scenario of the ark perfectly. It proves that the flood of Noah was real because there was either three or four. Let's see. Here's proof of Noah's flood. I'm looking at it. The why. So basically, it shows. It explains that it explains that it there's that it shows signs of a population bottleneck in which humanity almost became extinct, how many different Y chromosomes it shows were on the ark. One, the three sons inherited their Y chromosome from Noah, and since it's only one generation down, mutations would have been little to none. So there should only be one Y chromosome lineage today. How many different DNAs on the ark for offspring? Three, the three wives of Noah's son. The Bible doesn't mention that Noah and his wife had any more children. So and so it there's so basically that's it. So this human genome project shows exactly that. It shows that the amount of the male versus female DNA and all that stuff. And I'm not a specialist at this. Absolutely proves the flood. It also shows. Here's what evolutionists make of the data. It says, for the sake of simplicity, bottleneck in which humanity almost became extinct, they say 70,000 years ago. The population, they say that 70,000 years ago, this is evolutionists, because they have to prove the population that we're at. Folks, this whole concept that man started evolving 200,000 years ago and just kept expanding and improving, do you have any idea? If you do the math, okay, on how many people would be on the earth today, it is unbelievable. All you have to do is start to take, if you figure one man, well, you'd figure two people have, just figure they have two kids every 40 years, which is way, you know, that's stretching it. So you start with two. So you just start with two. So you go, there's two, and then there's four. And then you take the four times two, which is eight, times two is 16, times two is 32. It doesn't sound like much. Do that on your calculator 30 times, which is only 1,200 years. Do it 50 times. Do it 100 times. And you're going to start to see what I'm talking about. Now, you have to add in mortality because people die. Before the flood, the average lifespan was in that 800-year range. I mean, these people could accomplish great, amazing things. So Noah bottlenecked this knowledge through the flood. He did bring with him books, which, like I've said, stories go that the Library of Alexandria, which was destroyed by the Muslims, possessed some of the original writings or books carried by Noah through the flood. Whatever those look like, I would love to see it. I think there's a possibility that the earth before the flood might have been a lot more like the Lord of Rings. We've got little glimpses of other beings interacting with humans. We've got, when you go to the Egyptian Museum in New York, they had these little cone people, these little cone-headed people, 3 feet tall, 3 feet six, with heads that are twice as tall as yours and mine. And people say, oh, it's from banding. Well, banding would mean that you'd put a pressure band on a child's head and begin to create the cranial growth to the point where their head would become twice the size of ours. Not possible, number one. Number two, scientists and doctors, too, say that if you did that, you'd have an indentation from the belt or from the banding, and there's no indentation. And so there's a possibility there was another species of humans here that we are not aware of now because somehow they became extinct. Maybe they were incredibly intelligent. Maybe they assisted in who knows what, some of the construction of the things we see. I don't know. But for some reason, they became extinct. Maybe, who knows, maybe it's an immune system thing, or maybe they were just eradicated through genocide. Maybe they were hated. Maybe they ended up with all the money, like the Jews in Germany, after they were told they could not own land. And they ran banks from kiosks in the street, and they still took over financially in Germany. Which goes back to that Charles Murray's book, The Bell Curve, where he basically said there's a significant IQ and success rate difference in rate by race and nationality. People say, oh, that's racist. Statistics are statistics. I like how the fact that, you know, you could, if blacks perform worse, if you say that, you're a racist. But it's proven. If if you say that Asians perform better, that's okay, I guess. I don't know. But the fact is, the highest IQs on Earth by 6 points are the Jewish people. Why? I personally think it's the exposure to the Bible. I think the early exposure and study to the Word of God, especially in the Hebrew, which is made by man or by God for man somehow, may very well stimulate the brain in a way to create intelligence and wisdom. So, you know, it is a fact. But Noah, I keep doing this, Nimrod, after the flood, okay, I'm throwing you some crazy stuff here. So why and how did Nimrod get so much authority on earth after the flood? Well, one reason is they talk about how Nimrod became this mighty hunter on earth and became, you know, had all this power over the animals, and he was mighty this and mighty that. Well, we also know that the son of Noah, or the son of Noah, stole his jacket. Well, the jacket could very well be the coat that was worn by, well, history says, myth, legend, Jewish stories say, that they were carrying with them the coat that was created for Adam in the garden by God, which is how Noah was able to talk to the animals. The story goes, and this is even written in, I think, the book of Adam and Eve or the book of Noah or something like that. The story goes that when Noah put on that coat, he could talk to the animals. And that the story goes that Adam could still talk to the animals with that coat on. And that Noah used that to get the animals to the ark. The book of Jasher says that there was a number of animals that sat outside the ark and a bunch came in. The ones that sat outside, when the floods were starting to come on real heavy and like 700,000 men had gathered around the ark because the storms were so bad, and Noah gave a very, very harsh sermon to them, the animals pushed the people away as they tried to attack the ark as it began to float. But basically, so the story goes that Noah had the cloak that had been made out of animal skins for Adam. That cloak was stolen by Noah's son and then somehow acquired by Nimrod. And that's why Nimrod was this mighty warrior able to control the animals. So basically, Nimrod went through the ruled the world with these animals by as his assistants. And you can imagine at the time, I mean, there's evidence all over the world that looks post-flood of everything from African elephants to lions to rhinoceroses. You know, if you could control that level of power, especially at a time when they didn't technically have firearms, and even now it would be insurmountable. And so he was able to rule and reign at that time. He had gotten his sorcerers, Nimrod's sorcerers had gotten some kind of an insight that Abraham was going to be the father of, you know, this great nation of God. And so Nimrod went after and started to kill the firstborn up to 2 years of age, which is interesting because this happens three times that we know of. We know that it happens with Nimrod's era. We know that it happened with Pharaoh. And then we know that it happened again with Herod. It's very interesting. I don't know what the parallels are there, but it's very interesting that it's always young males under the age of two. And under each situation, perhaps, there are situations that somebody great rises up. The Nimrod situation, Abraham endures it and rises up. The Pharaoh situation, of course, Moses endures it and rises up. And, of course, the third one and the great one of all is Herod trying to kill all the young-born males under the age of two. And Jesus Christ comes out of that, our Messiah. So that's important, I would say, pretty profound. Why God does it that way, I don't know. Very, very interesting and intriguing. So apparently Nimrod gets wind of Abraham chases him. Abraham hides with Noah for like 33 years, learns all the ways of God, had some phenomenal understanding of God, the God that carried Noah through the flood and then came out of it. And then we get to, then we begin to see extraordinary intelligence. You know, the man begins to acquire and obtain great things and substantial, significant quantities of things. And I talked last week about Solomon. It's about his, it said he had wisdom, discernment, and a breadth of knowledge as broad as the sands of the ocean. The guy was brilliant. And then because of his wisdom and understanding and knowledge, he became rich. And you think, okay, I'm not preaching health and wealth. I'm preaching common sense. I've seen situations. God put me in banking and all this stuff. I've seen people come across money and be complete fools with it. And it's the blessing's over at that point. You know, I've seen people in hard situations beg God, get me out, get me out, get me out. I've seen them get a miraculous settlement for $50,000 or something. And I've seen them strut their stuff and start to talk about how great they were and how they accomplished this. And all of a sudden, their humility is gone. God's blessing is shut off at that point. But when you're wise, you don't stop behaving wisely. You get that money, you save it, you preserve it, you do wise things with it, you control your spending, you don't run out and buy something stupid, you know. And I've seen this over the years. And there is a difference between the people that God blesses. And believe me, the term is blessing. It's not gives, because there is such a difference between the two. When you read, you know, in Proverbs, like, in fact, I guess it'd probably be the Proverbs of today since it's the 10th. First of all, it's obvious. Ill-gotten gains do not profit, it says in 10:2, but righteousness delivers from death. So we know, first of all, that any financial gain that comes through, you know, through bad is bad. And then, you know, when God gives it to you, it comes without sorrow. And which it also says somewhere down here, I know it's in 10 somewhere, that basically wealth from God come without sorrow, that there's absolutely no sorrow to it. Proverbs 10:22, it is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich, and he adds no sorrow to it. So basically, when God blesses you, it says makes rich, which is, but see, making rich can be, mean so many different things, I think. But God, in America, the poor are rich. People on welfare are rich. I think just being able to have in your own private space, you know, the most important thing to our founding fathers was the ownership of property, the ability to have privacy. And I mean, your own quote unquote own private Idaho, you know, to be able to have private property that you can say, this is my property, that's the boundary, you can't come in here, is very important. Of course, we've begun to abuse that tremendously, I believe, through our legal system, but that's important. So, what we consider rich and what this scripture is talking about is rich. The word for rich in this scripture is ashar, but I'm looking it up right now, it means rich, it's wealthy. So basically, wealth, obviously, we know, comes from the Lord, but it says it's God's blessing, and he adds no sorrow to it. So in a nutshell, I guess where I'm going with this, and I'm so far from health and wealth preacher, what I'm telling you is all resources come from the Lord, okay? We can't, you know, the Bible's clear, the love of money is the root of all evil. But we've got to remember the source. And we've got to remember, no matter where, what situation we're in, God's the source. He's the provider. He's the one we seek. He gives us what we're worthy of, which is probably not a proper term either, because you know what we're truly worthy of is death. But he gives us what we can handle. As the parable of talents says so clearly, that he gives to each according to their ability. He doesn't give us more. Just like other scripture says, he does not test us beyond what we can bear. But the point of a test is to grow. And so if you have ugly behavior with money, whatever that may be, and I'm telling you, if you're so simple and so tight, and you need to really be honest with yourself, what are your motives? Why are you hanging on so tight? What are you afraid of? If you're frivolous and wasteful and you have shopping addictions and you pound up your credit card, you've got to ask yourself, why do you need money to get a rush? You know, we've got to ask ourselves, money tells us about ourselves. It tells us everything. And so God can use it to discipline us. He can use it to educate us. He can use it to bless us. He has to bless man to bless the church. And when we get into the situations where we are tithing and giving, first God blesses man, then he blesses the church. I'm sure many of you have had plenty of situations where the Holy Spirit tells you to give out of the blue. So, you know, God can take care of anybody at any time. I could get into stories about that, but I won't. So just to wrap up real quick, the Noah thing. So Abraham had incredible intelligence, and that technically passed on down to the Jews. And, you know, they've always been a nation of intelligence. They've always valued intelligence. It's always been an important part, I think, of who they are. I think, you know, I believe that it's part of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I believe that he wants us to be intellectually sound. I believe that he wants us to be the best. And I spoke recently about the fact that we're nobility. You know, and when you're nobility, you actually get special training as a child. You get special tutors. You get etiquette school. The girls get finishing school. I mean, you get trained up in the way you should go. You get, you know, because you represent the king. You represent the royal family. And as a child of God, we represent his royal family, our royal family. And in our minds, the numbers, you're like, well, yeah, that's neat, but how does that make sense when there's a billion of us in heaven? Well, I think, in other words, we're used to families of 4 to 6 or 3 or 2. Well, the fact of the matter is God's mathematics are a tad different than ours. And the fact that we're going to be in heaven for eternity. And my father died here a little bit ago. And I, you know, through a series of events, believe I was given a vivid vision of heaven. I'm positively convinced. And I can tell you it's beyond anything you would imagine. I can tell you that it's bigger than you can imagine, and there's a lot to do there. It's a physical place with everything you can imagine. I won't go into too much detail, but I saw the wheel within a wheel thing as a more of a transportation device that everybody had, and heaven was massive. You got to remember the Bible says it's 1,500 miles wide, 1,500 miles long, and 1,500 miles tall. That's an enclosed facility. Enclosed facility, 1,500 miles long. You can't even get, I mean, we have our outer atmosphere is at about 5 miles. I mean, you get into 100 miles above Earth and you are in outer space. And yet, heaven is 1,500 miles every direction. You can't even fathom the size of it. My point is this. We're part of a huge family, but with eternity, a billion people or whatever it's going to be in heaven, that's not a lot. Maybe it's 500 million. Maybe it's a billion. I don't know. But if you have eternity to get to know them, that's not a lot. And if you've had everything, you know, fleshly taken out of you that's basically decomposing and blocked, you know, again, in the old stories of Adam and Eve, after he left the garden, he began to no longer be able to hear the angels or hear God. And he began to get a veil over his eyes that blocked his ability to see spiritual things. That's where we're at today. Once that's lifted, folks, I can't tell you. It's unbelievable. There's a level of bliss in heaven that it's not ridiculous giddiness. I can tell you, again, like I said, I personally am 100% confident. I saw an unbelievable vision of heaven, and you are not just constantly you're worshiping God at all times, but it's not just a 24-hour-a-day church service. Some people think that's what it is. It's not. It's the most magnificent facility you have ever seen. And Jesus said clearly, I go to prepare a place for you. Where I go, the translation is, there are many mansions. It's really many dwelling places, because you don't need to sleep. And you might have your own space, but you don't need to own anything, because it's everybody's. And it is mammoth. And I wouldn't doubt, there's things I saw I won't get into, but I wouldn't doubt if there's museums that break down in detail, personal stories all over the place. I don't know. But I can tell you, I saw a facility that was like something you'd see on Star Wars. And so basically what I was saying is, you know, Abraham's family is the Jews, and then their blessing passed on to us, thanks be to God. And, you know, there's people that, I mean, God passed salvation through Christ onto us, the Gentiles. Unless you're a Jew, congratulations, then you're a Messianic Jew. But people curse the Jews for it instead of blessing God. They say, oh, those stupid Jews, they broke the covenant. And us superior Gentiles, we were smart enough to nab it. Yeah, we had no control over it. God spread the blessing. If God didn't spread the blessing of salvation through Christ, if the Jews just accepted Christ and said, here's our Messiah, boys, let's rock and roll, the rest of us would be doomed for what? We wouldn't even have the covering of Jesus on our life. What would we be under? Darkness? I mean, what would the earth be like? You see science fiction movies like this where darkness takes over. Look at Islam. What if Islam was allowed to prevail globally? What if darkness and sin and evil was allowed to prevail globally? And this happens, folks. This is a true battle. And Americans, we're foolish. I mean, maybe not you, the listeners, but there's a lot of people out there that are just flat dumb. You know, I was listening to some old speeches from Obama about how great he was because he used diplomacy. He said to fully disarm all of the chemical weapons of Assad. And guess what? Assad just used them on his people, and we went and blew up one of his facilities. Obama was a liar. Obama came out and said Al-Qaeda was done, and then Benghazi happened, and he tried to hide it. You know, these are not proper responses. The problem is that Obama had been brainwashed. He was an Islamic Muslim. He was a Muslim. He made mistakes multiple times calling himself a Muslim. In one case, George Stephanopoulos, he said, my Muslim faith. And George Stephanopoulos said to him, Mr. President, don't you mean your Christian faith? And he said, you know what I mean, George. Well, folks, like I always say, when is the last time you accidentally referred to your Muslim faith? You can't do it if you're a believer. It's like blaspheming Christ. For him to be able to say that, he has to be a Muslim. You can't do it. You can't say it. It's blasphemy. Because the religion of Islam is the darkest, most horrendous religion on earth. It is threatening us. The threat's not going away. And so what I said a little bit ago that I was talking, that I said I'd touch on briefly, is there's a few things I'd like to bust through. Our federal financial situation. I've touched on this over and over, and I don't want to overdo it for you again. But the bottom line is the fact that our deficit is out of control. I'm going to pound these numbers by you again. You've heard them, okay? You've got a $20 trillion debt clock, or $20 trillion deficit. And the reason I said debt clock, if you go to usdebtclock.org, You can look at the numbers that I'm going to talk to you about here real quick. And luckily now they've got it so it works on iPhones and Apple. It never did for a long time. So at the top left of the screen, they've got U.S. national debt. 19.871. In other words, 19.9 will round to $20 trillion. And it does say on there what I say. Debt per citizen, $61,171. Then they say debt per taxpayer. Well, the problem with that figure is the fact that they are not including children in the calculations. They're going off of, well, they're going off of adults within a certain bandwidth, blah, blah, blah. The bottom line is, but let's just, the real figure is 335,000, double what they have. But let's just say for a minute they're right. Let's say they're saying the debt per taxpayer is $165,000. I mean, how much is your mortgage? How long does it take you to pay it off? How in the world can this ever be paid off? It can't. And it's racking up right now. Folks, here's how the net deficit's going as I speak to you. So we've got 100 and I'll start right now. So it's 19,871,049,000,000, and then it's 300,000, 320, 330,000, 40,000, 350,000, 60,000, 70,000, 80,000, 400,000, 420,000, 440,000, 460,000, 480,000, 500,000, 520. You get the point, right? I mean, like, literally, it is running off so fast right now as I watch it. It's unbearable. Now, boom, there's 600,000. I mean, we started a few seconds ago at, what, 200,000? Now we're at 700,000. Pretty soon we're going from 49 million to 50 million. Now we're close right now. We're rolling to 800,000. It's soon going to jump, you know, just in the moments that I've looked at it, it's gone up a million. And $1 million. So it's like I don't even know what it is, folks. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So our current budget's at $4 trillion a year, which just keeps climbing. They go into Medicare, Medicaid. What our tax revenue is, $3.4 trillion. When Obama got in, it was $1.5. He's a fool. He racked us through the mountain, folks. It's nuts. Interest paid, $2.5 trillion. Interest, get this, interest paid per citizen. This is nuts. Seven. Okay, this is crazy. They added some stuff here I really like. Okay, so I'm going to forget that. They say interest per citizen, $7,661. So here they go. Not counting unfunded liabilities. So they have our deficit plus our budget in items plus our domestic product, you know, plus or minus and et cetera. So they come down here and they show total debt per citizen, $211,000. Total debt per family, $827,540. Their total debt that they show on U.S. Debt Clock, and this is from the government, $827,000 in debt per family. They go into our, then they add our, you know, our personal debt. The debt held by individuals, consumer debt, they go $18.25 trillion, which is going up like racing up as we speak. Personal debt's $18.2 trillion. Mortgage debt, $14.4 trillion. Student loan debt, $1.4 trillion. Credit card debt, $1.4 trillion. You know, and then the personal credit card debt, $56,000 per citizen. I mean, this stuff is beyond ridiculous. This is unbelievable. These numbers are insane, folks. I mean, go to usdebtclock.org, take a minute, look at it. Look it over. Go down about right somewhere in the middle of the screen where they have total debt per family, $827,000. My point is this. That is not ever going to get paid off. We are either going bankrupt or they're going to hyperinflate so that your dollar is rubbish. And folks, I'm going to tell you something. This mentality that everything's fine because it has been. I sat with a friend, a business acquaintance last week and sold a portfolio, and his wife was there. Women struggle with this. Sometimes I think it's their personality makeup, and they're not always as in touch with what's going on in the world around them. What happens a lot of times with women, and I'm a sexist in this modern society, but because of the emotion, when they start to see what's going on out there, it bothers them. They get really bothered. They tend to react a lot more intensely than men because they're emotional. They take it very serious. And in some cases, it becomes overwhelming, and they block it out. They say, this is unhealthy. This is unproductive. I've got to get away with it. It can't be real. It's kind of like the stages of grief, you know, the denial. But the thing about the stages of grief, whatever it is, you know, denial and anger and bargaining and acceptance, and I don't know what they are. Not everybody makes it through all those stages. People automatically assume you make them through. There's no guarantee. Some people get stuck on denial. Some people get stuck on anger. And so people will see this and the denial kicks in, and there's where they're going to stay, and they shut the computer, shut that page off and leave and don't deal with it. As good stewards, folks, the reason that we got into this situation in America is because our entire economic system is based on a lie, and it's a sin. It's debt-based. That's why you got to read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And folks, we got plenty of copies here if you want one. But let me tell you, and listen to me on this. That book was written by J. Edward Griffin, and at the back of it has a bibliography that's a half inch thick because he knew the attack he'd be under. Everything is so readily documented there, it's unbelievable. The book is specifically written. He said there's an introduction and a summary to every chapter, and he says read it like this first. You read the intro and the summary. He says you can get through the whole book, which is about a 2-inch thick book. You can get through the whole book in an hour, he says. I say two. I get so many people that come in here and I say, he says to read it like this first and then go back. Oh, no, I like to read books. I'm going to go front to back. And they never finish. Just if you're going to get the book, read it the way the author told you to read it. Remember Proverbs 18:2, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. The author obviously knows what he's talking about, right? So just do it that way and you'll get the picture. He's so clear about how we were converted from, this was a God-fearing, cash-based world, man. This country was it. We had it down right. That's what the Morgan silver dollar is about, and our old gold pieces, and even our old U.S. coins. People are like, I don't want numismatic coins. Folks, we were the hub of the world. We made the coolest coins out of, you know, real metal. And we established the economy of the world, the most solid economic stance in the world history. And those coins are still rare and still desirable today. And they perform tremendously. They maintain spending power at the pace they had back when they were created. Why that is, I don't know. But it's pretty bizarre. You know, you get some of these, you get an old Carson City seated half dollar and the thing's gone up 60,000% over 70 years. It just keeps ticking, 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 ticking. You know, those are the things we build into portfolios. We know what we're doing. We literally, if a friend of mine was here watching us in the back room and he was talking about business ethics because he owns a large real estate holding company. And he said, wow. He goes, you guys really toil over this. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I sat there and I watched you guys look through these customers' portfolios, these people who had given you their money to invest. And he goes, I watched you guys toil among yourselves on how much you care about these people's money and how important it is to you to look at their whole profile, their current holding base, and what their goals are, short, middle, or long, if it's grandma saving for grandson's college, or if it's, you know, Uncle Fred looking for a truck in 2 years, or you know, Bob looking to retire in 7. You guys consider all that. You look at if they have too much gold, you want them to get into a balance of silver and some semi-numismatic. And he goes, you guys really care. He goes, I guarantee you there's no broker out there that does this. And I said to him, you know what? You're right. I said, you know why? Because we win when they win. When our client wins, we win. We don't win if you don't win, folks. And we, if you knew what I was doing recently with these, you know, going through this inventory, getting out some of the coolest stuff I've saved for decades and pricing it at just compressed wholesale so that when a person buys it and walks out, and if they walk in 5 years, they get every penny of the market increase. There's not a tad of margin in it. It's 100% at its liquid value today. That's how we're selling stuff right now, because I've got a tremendous inventory that I've saved for years, and I pass my knowledge on to my clients, my investors. I build portfolios. If you come in, all you have to do, folks, is just come in, bring us what you want to invest, and say, I want you to build a portfolio for me, and be patient. Give us a little bit of time. We've got the material. We've got vaults full, but we're busy. I mean, I'll be candid. We're busy. And a lot, if people come in on the impatience train, you know, people think that if it takes us, if we want a little bit of time to put it together, that somehow it means we don't have it or something. That's not the case. We've got too much, and we've got a lot of customers and a lot of clients, and we've got to consider things, and we have to consult among ourselves. We take it very serious. I'm telling you, when you look at these numbers, why would you ever be in paper? Do you know that all this debt is what is pumping up your 401k and your IRA? Well, that stock you're so proud of, you know, that Apple stock or that Nordstrom stock or whatever it is, this is pumped up by this, where it says total debt per family, $827,000. Folks, we have got total debt, consumer debt, $68.5 trillion. Total national debt, $130 trillion. Total U.S. unfunded liabilities, $105 trillion. Start racking that up. You've got hundreds of trillions of dollars in debt in this country. I mean, it gets to the point, folks, where it is literally millions of dollars. When you rack up all our debt, millions of dollars per individual in this country. We are so beyond bankrupt, folks. I am not making any of this up. But just because the walls aren't crashing down. Have you ever seen what happened to the Jews in Nazi Germany? That they were just positive it wouldn't happen to them? Just positive. And they wouldn't move. You know how hard it is? Once you think, it's kind of like a friend of mine who said that he knew Christ was real and he just kept planning to wait until the end to turn to Christ. Well, one day he had a situation where he was going to die. He got stuck on a train track. The train was coming. He could not pray to receive Christ. He couldn't do it because God wasn't there at that time for him. I mean, God was there, but God wasn't allowing it. God has to draw us. And then he miraculously got saved. He got rammed by a guy who was driving a big truck. The guy basically totaled his car and just really trashed his truck. The guy busted through, he basically slammed into this person's car so hard that both cars flew right in front of the train to save this guy's life. And now, guess what? He's a believer. But my point is this. You think that you're going to sit on your paper investments until you get some sign? Do you think that this market is going to just give you, like, send you notices before it blows? It's going to hit so hard and so fast, folks. And I'm telling you, I don't know when, but my goodness, Obama has done stuff here. I watched this like a hawk over the years. What this bad boy looks like now is insane. And I'm talking about the debt clock. What Obama did to us was 100% intentional. He fundamentally transformed America. It's the Cloward and Piven strategy to destroy the United States with this stupid idea that everyone's going to get a paycheck. It's the dumbest logic. I've tried to read it, and I'm like, what are you thinking? There's nothing to it. But just because it makes no sense doesn't mean they don't believe it. And on top of it, he's a Black Panther, Black Liberation Theologist. I mean, this man ran our country, for God's sakes. You know, and now we're hacking on Trump. But I'm just telling you, folks, quit playing games. You got nothing to lose. Let's look at the other flip side. So what? So what if you get into the investment recommendations we make? What do you got to lose? Nothing. You sit around, people go, well, won't gold go down to nothing? Well, I don't know. Do you read the Bible? According to God, it won't. It's going to be of value till the final day. It's good enough for heaven. It was good enough to be the first thing he gave to Christ. It was good enough for his temple. It was good enough for the second chapter of Genesis telling people, this is money, go get it. It was good enough for the founding fathers and the patriarchs. We're, just because we're ignorant doesn't mean God is. And just because we have all this new technology doesn't mean we're outsmarting God. Our founding fathers, everything they did was for a reason. We breached all the majors on that, folks. We've killed it. The Coinage Act said it had to be gold or silver, or and if anybody debased it, they were to be put to death. That's how serious this is. And this is why. And they spoke, all of them, about banks and bankers and what they do to our country. And now I'm talking to you about it. $827,541 total debt per family. That's the U.S. That's on the usdebtclock.org, folks. So, you going to do something, or are you going to sit there and do nothing? We do 401ks. We do IRAs in metals. We help you roll in. We help you roll out. We'll help you do whatever the heck you want. But I'm telling you, folks, do something now. I mean, do it. You know, just get the money. Get it. Let's get it in God's stuff. Give us time. We'll build you a beautiful portfolio. But get it done. I mean, quit dinking around. I am not kidding you. I don't know. How is this staying together? I don't know. We've got so many global issues, maybe war. Now they want a war to hide this more. Folks, what's, you tell me. If you can tell me how this is going to hold together and why it'll never blow, I need to hear from you. Send me an email and explain it. But please don't waste my time with stupidity. I want facts and numbers. So anyway, call Coins Plus 444-0044, toll free 877-TAP-COIN, or through our website at coinsplus.com. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless, and we'll see you Wednesday. Bye-bye.